Hello, and welcome to Healthcare Insider, a podcast series from the Modern Healthcare Content Studio. I'm your host, Maria Castellucci, Deputy Editor of the Content Studio. It's my pleasure to welcome our guests today. Dr. Rob Bessler is the CEO of Honest Health, a physician-led, value-based care enablement platform supporting health systems and providers succeed in value-based care. A healthcare innovator and leader for more than two decades, Dr. Bessler brings deep operational and clinical leadership experience to advancing risk-based healthcare models. Joining him is Seema Verma, the Executive Vice President and General Manager at Oracle, leading Oracle Health and Life Sciences. She previously served as the Administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, where she oversaw Medicare, Medicaid, and innovation initiatives impacting care delivery, technology adoption, and value-based payment models nationwide. Thank you both so much for joining the podcast today.
Great to be with you.
Thanks, Maria.
Today, we'll be discussing where AI can truly support value-based care, close data gaps, and advance population health. Let's dive in. So, from your respective perspectives, where do you see AI having the most immediate and practical impact on healthcare delivery today?
So look, when I look at AI, I think there's tremendous opportunity. And Rob and I have been at trying to transform healthcare for a long time now. And there's been lots of fits and starts. I think there was a lot of hope for value-based care. But I think if we sort of look at where we've been over the last 20 years, it's actually been pretty incremental progress in terms of increasing quality and access and lowering costs. And if we look at the data that just came out from the CMS actuary, right, just this year, we're seeing that healthcare costs are growing even faster and it costs even more. So we haven't really solved a lot of the problems that we've been working on for many decades. What I see AI is an absolute game changer to the problems that we have, and that this may be the thing that, you know, isn't going to solve everything, but I think it's going to make things a lot easier. So I'll start at a broad level. And, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about for a long time is workforce and burnout. And if we look at healthcare and where we're spending a lot of money, when you kind of go underneath the covers, a lot of that is on people. We spend a lot of the healthcare dollar just on whether it's doctors and nurses and back office people. And throughout that, I think those of us that are on the, or Rob, who's on the front lines of healthcare, know that there's just a lot of manual work that you're doing and a lot of redundant work. And this is where AI can actually start doing some of that work and leaving more of the human work to humans. So a few examples that I'll give in terms of what we've seen over the last couple of years for AI. One of them is the ambient scribe. This has really had widespread adoption across the healthcare system, and there's tons of products out there. And essentially what it's doing is just listening to the patient-doctor interaction and then generating the doctor's note. And that seems fairly straightforward, but it's been a game changer. You can imagine how much time doctors are spending on just creating these notes. So that's one big thing. The second thing is we're seeing emerging technology on just giving a patient summary. And again, maybe that doesn't sound like a big deal, but if you've got a patient that is an older patient that has multiple comorbidities, there's a lot of background work that has to be done by the doctor, and it can take them a lot of time to go through the medical record. So even just having a concise summary. And we're starting to see a lot of emerging models around prior authorization, revenue cycle. So a lot of the manual work. And if you think about it, what AI does is it's able to bring a lot of information together and it's able to rapidly analyze it in a way that actually work a lot faster than a human brain can, because it can take a lot of different information. So I think we're just at the beginning of what AI can do, but it's really intended to address a lot of the manual labor, back office. And I think what we're going to see, and we're starting to see, is actually even helping with clinical decision support. So helping doctors make those decisions, assess what needs the patient has and what's the right diagnosis and treatment. And I think that's actually where maybe the best of AI will happen, and that it can help the doctor provide better care, connect patients to clinical trials, and make sure they're getting the latest treatments. And if you can imagine nowadays for physicians, there's so much information out there. There's new therapies and treatments and research coming out every day. It's almost impossible for them to stay up on all of it. So again, AI provides a promise of providing more personalized, up-to-date information to providers.
Yeah, Maria, I would obviously concur with what Seema is saying. I'll give you a few practical examples in value-based care where we're implementing or have implemented AI tools. I think anywhere you can remove tasks that are low value to the provider, where, you know, that are repetitive in nature. I've spent 20 plus years leading physicians and trying to drive engagement. And the number one way to drive engagement is make physicians more proud of the care they provide. I kind of think about everything focused on number one, are you making care better? Number two, comparative information to drive physician behavior, like amongst physicians, and then three, financial incentives. But within the AI tools, like for example, like what we found is you really need it to have physician oversight for sure, so that it's not just kind of doing it on its own, but it really have the docs focus on high value efforts. So for example, we use all sorts of analytics to identify our high risk patients. And then within our high risk patients, we used to have a very expensive resource, our care managers, calling all these patients to try to engage them and then wrap services around these high risk patients and spend most of the money. What we found is a lot of the times the seniors were hanging up on our nurses, mostly because they thought it was just another spam call. And, you know, just like my dad and everybody else's parents, they're on their phone a lot. And so we implemented an AI tool that is texting with these patients. And it turns out that it's less invasive. Obviously, you don't have to respond to the text, you opt in. But what we found is once folks opt in and start having that dialogue back and forth with the AI agent, then a subset of them will opt in for the human care management connection. And so when our nurses are calling now, they're not calling somebody that hasn't opted in, which is kind of remarkable, right? And so the nurses are more proud because they're not feeling like they're getting hung up on all day long like a spam caller. And the patients are accepting the call. So it's like a win-win, right? And so that's just a real practical example of where we're using it. And then on the back, we went from having a coder, you know, 2 years ago, be able to review 20, 30 charts in a good day, you know, that super productive coder. And now we can put out what we call pre-visit plans, which identify all the prior codes the patient had and any suspects based on visits to some other doctor. We can push 25,000 of those in a day. And now we have coders that are doing the checking of the AI, because it's still a work in progress. There's hallucinations and, you know, it's kind of like one electric car gets in an accident and everybody freaks out when it self-drives, when in fact it's much safer than humans. The same thing is happening when we turn on an AI tool and there's like one terrible example of a patient going into showed up at a diabetes clinic, but doesn't have diabetes. But because the title of the clinic was diabetes, the doctor was presented, does this patient have diabetes? Right. And so like, it's not perfect. So we still have to have the coders doing the higher level activities. And I think frankly, the coders are more proud of what they're doing because they're not doing the mundane tasks as much as well.
Well, both of your comments are a great segue into my next question. You both offered some really great examples, and then Robbie started to talk a little bit about risk. So I think this is a good segue. So as AI becomes more embedded in care delivery, what are the biggest opportunities and risks for clinical decision-making and population health?
Well, I think the risks are just bad information. You know, the risks are the same security stuff that we already have risks on today. We're working with more and more vendors that offer different tools, and the more connections where Seema and I built our friendship was over interoperability a couple of administrations ago. And we still have plenty of work to do, but I think all of that interoperability introduces plenty of risk, which is, I think, good for patients to have more interoperability. No, don't get me wrong, but it's just a real issue is because of all that sharing of information. And then the opportunity is, I heard a stat recently, there's something like 75 new studies a week that come out in cancer care, something absurd. Like, how can anyone be on over everything? And so I think outside of going to a couple fancy places that have the best of every specific diagnosis or disease, I think there's a real opportunity for mainstream America to get the best options for care going forward in a much more streamlined way. I think that's probably the most promising thing for me, is like the ability to do that. There's still nuance and all the rest, but I think at least flagging when someone's about to get care that it doesn't meet what is the best practice or standard would be a fantastic leap forward.
Yeah. And I think, Rob, you're spot on, right? I mean, the AI is only going to be as good as the data underneath it. And so if we don't have interoperability, we don't have complete medical records, then I think that the AI is at a particular disadvantage. And I would also agree with Rob, right? We're going to be less forgiving of the machine than we are of humans, right? We've seen that with the robotic cars and the self-driving cars, you know, that if they don't do as good of a job, everybody's sort of all over it. And I think that's the same thing that we're going to see in AI. I will say that I think it is important at this stage that we do have a human in the loop. And I think, you know, Rob kind of pointed that out. And that's really important. So when we look at agentic AI, you just want to make sure that at every step, there's somebody supervising because there could be issues. The other thing I would say is that not all AI vendors are created equally, and it's important for the purchaser to understand how the AI model was trained on what type of data, and going forward, what type of data is it going to use? So I'll give you a few examples. We've heard about models out there or that are trained on, let's say, 13 years of historical data. And you're like, oh, that actually sounds really good. Well, actually, no, because the practice of medicine has changed a lot in 13 years. And so if you were training your model on older data, it may actually not yield the type of results that you would want. The other concept is the idea of multimodal data. So if we think about it, our own minds are taking in a lot of different types of information. So if we think about how a provider is making a decision, they're diagnosing the patient, they're deciding that they want to use a particular medicine. And inside that decision-making, they may think, well, is this medication covered by the insurance company? And if you want AI to do the same, then AI has to bring in all of that type of information. So they can't just use 13 years of historical medical information. They would also need to bring in, well, what is covered by this insurance company? And does it require a prior authorization? And here's all the steps that you have to go through to do the prior authorization. So we have to make sure that the AI is multimodal and that it can bring in different types of information and that it can bring in evergreen data, right? So Rob just referenced all the new studies that are coming out. Well, you'd want to make sure that the AI tool that you're using has the ability to bring in fresh research so that you are, you know, bringing the right decisions or bringing the right information to the provider. So again, early innings in AI, and I think we're all going to learn about what's the best way to even buy a product. Because I think we're here in the market, everybody says that they're doing AI. You know, you hear that across the board, but it's really important to understand how that model is trained and how that model is going to stay updated. Because if it's trained on bad practices, then that's just going to continue and the AI wouldn't necessarily know the difference.
Yeah. And I think this is a great segue to the next question, right? So how can health system and hospital leaders adopt AI in the ways that you're both saying, where it's actually supporting clinicians rather than adding complexity or more challenges?
Well, I think obviously I'm biased in my view, but you can't do any of these things in a vacuum without the docs. I think like anything, you got to keep things simple. You got to figure out what would be the biggest impact. I'm a huge fan of quick little victories. Don't try to eat the elephant all at once, you know, one bite at a time, and try to get some wins on the board that build momentum, that create confidence in the clinicians that what's being put in place. That's why ambient listening has gone gangbusters and is, you know, massive breakthrough, I think, for Oracle's products and others, I'm sure, but it's just like, docs love it. You know, it is very tangible. It's impacting their day. And oh, by the way, the care is better. When you document better, you communicate with other colleagues better, and then patients get better outcomes. And so the mistake in lots of areas of workflow in healthcare is when the docs are not involved. And I think there was a whole period of time where they weren't. And I think now that's changed, but it's kind of making sure what got you here gets you there and having the docs involved every step of the way.
I would agree with that. And Rob, docs, right, nurses, or even for back office employees, the people that are using the tools are the ones that have to have trust in the tool. And as long as we have human in the loop. And so we have to think about how do we engender that type of trust with whoever's using the tool. you know, for clinical AI agent, I mean, we saw great results. And, you know, some of the data was like a 40% reduction in time spent within the EHR. So imagine that, right? That had a big impact, 80% adoption rate and 40% decrease in documentation time. And the data becomes really important too, because, you know, you may have some providers that are reluctant to use the tools. And so I think we have to think about change management too, right? So it's not just, you know, here's the tech and walk away, but showing them the value, making sure they trust it. One of the things that we've just been putting into the field is something around summarization that gives you the summary of the patient. And literally every notation that the summary provides is annotated, so you can go back to the source. So if it says, you know, this person had a broken bone a long time ago, whatever, you can actually go back and click on that, and you can see the source of information. Things like that build trust, because if a doctor's looking at that, looks a little off to them, they have the ability to go back. I think if it's just a summary that doesn't exactly tell you where it came from, then there's a little bit of a lack of trust. The other thing that I would say is that I do think that when it comes to AI, that change management and business process transformation are two terms that are going to be vital here. I think Rob already spoke to adoption and the trust issue. But I think in terms of the impact that it's going to have on business processes is really important. So if we think about ambient listening, I can't tell you how many providers or administrators say, oh, the ambient tool's been great. Our providers really like it. There's less pajama time, but it's not really doing anything for my bottom line. And that's where you have to almost have a parallel strategy to think about, what does scheduling look like? If the doctor's now finished up at 4 o'clock because they don't have all this documentation, maybe we should think about changes to the schedule. Now, you don't want to then overload them with a bunch of patients either, but I think you have to look at those things. Or if we look at things like automated prior authorization, those products are coming into the market now as well. Well, you may not need the type of the support that you have in the back office to do these prior authorizations because it's automated. And so with every time we bring a new tool, we have to think about what is the human impact on resources and on trust? And then what is the return on investment? What is it actually bringing to the table? Because I think, you know, I know we're going to get to this, but we'll talk a little bit about the value that it brings. The end user has to see the value, not only in terms of time, ease, reducing, you know, menial tasks and things like that, that Rob already referenced, but I think also to the administrator, they have to see that there is a return on value, that there's a return on the investment, that you're actually getting some value by using the tool.
Really great points from both of you. Thank you. So as we wrap up, I thought it'd be great to leave our audience with a piece of advice. So if you could leave health system leaders with one principle to guide AI investment decisions over the next few years, what would it be?
Making docs proud of the care they give will drive great success.
Yeah, I love that, Rob. I mean, look, I think my advice would be, this is a new day. We can't think in the way that we have in the past in terms of technology, and this investment really has the power to transform their health systems, the care that they deliver, the experience that their workforce has as well. So it's a new day, and I think they're going to have to think about technology in a different way. The other thing I would encourage them to do with technology vendors is that they have to show that there is a return on the investment and that they have to deliver value. And that's something that I think technology has not served healthcare well in the past. And we've put a lot of money into it and we haven't always gotten what we needed, what we wanted. And in some ways, I think it made healthcare worse. So hopefully this time will be better and we'll demand that on the front end.
Well, fantastic. That's a great place to leave off. Rob, Seema, thank you so much for joining the podcast and sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Healthcare Insider, created in collaboration with Honest Health. For more information about them, please visit partnerwithhonest.com. I'm your host, Maria Castellucci. You can find more episodes of Healthcare Insider under the podcast section of modernhealthcare.com or by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for listening.